It's Peter Propp, and we're here with another episode of 10 Minute Strategy. I'm here with my friend Michael Stoner, who's had a really interesting career in the world of advertising and the liquor industry. So Michael, as I recall, back in our 20s, you started something rather large when you joined Johnny Walker. Why don't we just talk about you know what you're doing previously and how you got into that world?
Sure. Thanks, Pete. Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was kind of another lifetime ago. Anyhow, if I go back to being in my early 20s, I started my career on the Toyota business at Saatchi & Saatchi, and I moved to Bakersfield Bates, where I helped to launch the Hyundai brand, and they had the Miller Lite business. So I started out in Southern California, and then Backer moved me back to New York City, where I worked for a year and a half on the Taste Great Less Filling All-Stars campaign. And because I was in the beer business, I got calls from a couple of recruiters on the client side. And in this case, it was for the joint venture of what was then United Distillers and Moët Hennessy, and it was called Shefflin and Somerset. And while Shefflin and Somerset sounds like an ad agency, it wasn't. It was the joint venture between what's now Diageo and Moët Hennessy, which is the MH and LVMH. And my first job, and I was 26 years old, I was the brand manager for Johnny Walker. And when I got there, one of my biggest concerns and reservations was, well, brown spirits as a whole. So all of whiskey, Scotch whiskey, Irish whiskey, bourbon whiskey, North American whiskey, American was all of it was declining. And even more kind of distressing to me, at least, was I could count on one hand all the people I knew who drank Scotch, and three out of the five were in their 60s. And, one of them was my stepfather, who would go on to quit at the order of his doctor when he hit 65. And it seemed to me that the notion of competing in a declining market was like losing every day. And I couldn't get my head around that. I couldn't get my head around the idea that I'm just going to be a little less bad than the next guys. And it was the insight, and it's not, I didn't think it was a blinding insight, but the insight was my friends don't drink Scotch. I've got to teach them how to drink Scotch. And when I was quite a bit younger than that, I had been turned on to Scotch and ginger ale by my cousin, who was 5 years older than me. And it was delicious. It was so much better than beer. And I was a neophyte at the time, and beer didn't taste very good. But, you know, like everyone who ends up drinking, maybe it at legal drinking age in college, knows that beer's an acquired taste. Well, so is Scotch. And Scotch is just at a different level. And it's not just about the taste. It's really about, what are your friends doing? Are your friends drinking beer? If they're drinking beer, you're drinking beer and you acquire the taste. And that would have been the case when my father was in college in the early 50s for Scotch. You know, their friends were drinking Scotch. It was actually a party drink. If you got out of college, you put on a suit and tie, you went to work, and you did what your boss did, and you did what your friends did, and that was drink Scotch. And they were drinking lots of other things, but Scotch was a 30 million case business, and it had declined by the time I got to it to 16 million. And when I got on to Johnny Walker, Red Label was a million cases and Black Label was 250,000 cases. Black Label was growing by 1% or 2%, and Red Label was declining by about 4 or 5%, which was better than J&B or Cutty Sark, which were declining by 10%. But again, it was like, that's just a little bit less worse than the other guys. And it was like, okay, how am I going to get Black Label to really ramp up? And I met a guy, his name was Evan Katnack. He had been he was the distillery manager at the time at Cardew, which is a single malt that's considered the heart and soul of all of the Johnny Walker blends. But he'd worked at Lagavulin, at Dalwhinnie, at Kalila, at Glenkinchie, at Rosebank, and maybe one other. And he was as charming as you could get. And he was working on a PR program called the Million Dollar Nose. And we insured Evan's nose for $1 million with that a very famous London-based insurance company who's not coming to mind.
Lloyd's of London.
It was Lloyd's. Lloyd's took out $1 million policy on Evan's nose.
Which was
hilarious. And it got Evan all kinds of kind of a tour through the PR department. I was the brand manager. So I went to a few of these events that he would put on for the local retail trade and the local press. And I recognized his innate talent in front of people. He just could charm anyone. He was so charismatic. He was so knowledgeable. And he was a Robert Burns expert who could rattle off the address to the haggis at a moment's notice. I mean, he was Sean Connery in a kilt. And in his mid-50s, this is a shinty plane, ex-Navy guy, grew up on a farm who had been in the distilling business for 30 years at that stage. And I'm like, I got to get this guy in front of my friends. I'd done a fair amount of theater back in the day when we went to college together at Kenyon. And I recognized the importance of putting on a good show for people in order to introduce them to something. So it didn't start big, it started quite small. And it was like, I invited you and another friend of ours, Jim Rossman, and a handful of other people to the very first one at Keene's Chop House.
Anyway, there was one prior to that at your apartment.
Well, okay, so that's true. And this is before we did our first formal tasting at a restaurant. And it was on the Upper West Side, West 83rd Street between Columbus and Central Park West. And it was a three-story walk-up. And I remember carrying 12 bottles of single malt scotch and another basket of tasting glasses. And we had about, I think, 12 to 15 people there. And we were passing wine and crackers. And the girls, my wife, who was then my girlfriend, and mutual friend of ours from college, kind of, she got all the food together and people just had a great time. They might have overconsumed a bit that
yeah,
night.
I don't think any of those bottles were left at the end of the night.
I think very little. And so I went around the room kind of halfway through and said, is this interesting enough where you'd go to a wine tasting, but it's single malt scotch that leads to the blend? All of these are components that go into Johnny Walker. And everybody said, oh yeah, this is so much fun. Yeah, of course. And I said, well, is it good enough for you to bring five of your friends? And everybody said, of course, I'd love to bring five of my friends. So that then kicked off the initial round of recruiting friend get friend or friend get colleague or friend get, you know, brother or sister or cousin, or sometimes parents would come along. And there is a gentleman named Dan Butling. Dan and I were, we were both in the marketing department. He had lots of friends in New York, just like I did. So he recruited half of the people. I recruited half of the people. And this was like, this is intimate. This is like kind of wedding planning, because right, it's people, you know, we had to do the RSVPs. There was nothing efficient. There was no internet. you couldn't email invitations. We had to call people. We had to mail them invitations. But we got 75 to 100 people the first four nights. And from that, we got 500 or 600 new people to come back about a month later. And we knew, we looked at each other after the fourth one, and I said to Dan, I think we're onto something. And he said, yeah, I do too. Okay. That was in 1991. And the mentor program since expanded to about 15 US markets for 32 years. And it is still going on in 10 international markets and has been running since 1995 internationally. Maybe more importantly, Red Label has declined a bit. It's about 950,000 cases. It's held its own on share, but the real The very exciting part is, from my perspective as a former brand manager, is Black Label in a declining market of 7% every year for 35 years, went from 250,000 cases to 1 million where it is today. And Black Label contributes about $300 a case to profit after advertising and promotion. I mean, and if you can get Black Label to grow, you're making Diageo a lot of money, and you can track Black Label's sales curve alongside of Diageo's stock price. And as Johnnie Walker grows, so does Diageo's stock price, because they have literally $1 billion worth of aging whiskey. Black Label's a 12-year-old. And you know, right, you're taking a huge bet by laying down whiskey for 12 years on what's demand going to be like in the future. And the mentor program, as far as I know, is the single longest running, most successful activation program, relationship marketing program that Diageo has ever run. And it was great fun. The other metric, which I can't give you numbers on, but I now, instead of having 5 friends who drink scotch, I have at least 50 friends who drink scotch, and almost all of them drink Black Label, because that's what happens. When you acquire taste for a brand that you like, you tend to stick with it the rest of your career. And you might drink Maker's Mark or Bulleit or Jack Daniels when you're not drinking scotch, but when you come back to scotch, you tend to come back to Johnnie Walker Black. And that's borne out by the numbers.
Right. So we're trying to keep these at 10 minutes. I just want to give you my, you know, view of it is you took a, you know, a challenging issue for this brand. And then you associated the brand with something that was cool and mysterious, which was single malts. And I think it was, to me, it was counterintuitive at the time that you were going to educate people on single malts and drive sales for Johnnie Walker. But that's what you did. You had the confidence that if you explained to people what was going on and why the different scotches tasted different, and yeah, you might not like this, you might not choose it as your everyday scotch, this one, maybe Laphroaig is an example. It's a very peaty, strong taste. But hey, when it goes into the mix, when you put that sort of a flavor into a mix with other products that maybe are sweeter or have different profiles, you end up with Johnnie Walker, which is smooth and consistent every time. I think that was a really counterintuitive idea that's been stolen by many since.
Sure.
And so it's a really interesting notion.
You've got all of that right. And the only modification that I have to point out, because Laphroaig was a competitor, right down the bay of Islay, it was Lagavulin.
Lagavulin
goes in to the Johnnie Walker blend. And you're right about the idea was to use the classic malts of Scotland and Cardew as different regional differences in flavor profile, in peat or smoke profile, phenols is how it's measured, in kind of overall finish. You know, is it strong in the beginning and then it lingers, or it goes away pretty quickly? Like Glenkinchie is very, very light, and so is Dalwhinnie. It's both of them are very, very sweet. Craganmore and Cardew are right in the middle. And then you've got Talisker, Lagavulin, and Oban, which are heavily peated. And Lagavulin's more peated than Laphroaig. You put all of those things together into the blend. Also, with grain whiskies, which kind of calms everything down. And you end up, as Evan would say, with the orchestra as opposed to a single instrument. Right. And I always loved that metaphor. I always thought that metaphor was very right. And the distillery manager is both the conductor of the orchestra, but he is also the composer of the music. Because you lose distilleries. Distilleries get mothballed. They go out of business and you lose that stock. So you have to have the talent to find the right replacement over time. And it's changing. It's not fixed, and it's not scientific. It's driven by art much more than science.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a great story. And I one that I always tell people, but recently, and we'll just wrap with this, and I think you get a kick out of it. I was at a guy's weekend, and our host said, "Oh, we've arranged for a bourbon tasting." So I go into this big room, They're going to feed us a nice dinner. And sure enough, he's got four bottles of bourbon and a pre-made Manhattan. And he goes through the spiel like Evan used to do. And it just cracked me up. I was like, look at what Michael started. You know, every time the format was almost exactly the same.
It's funny. I thought that it was blindingly obvious and not counterintuitive at all that you would take your ingredients, which were incredibly high quality and interesting, and then wine tastings were popular at the time, but Scotch tastings weren't because, well, Scotch wasn't very popular at the time.
Right.
And we found a way, and you have to credit both the classic malt range and Cardew and their quality, as well as Black Label's quality. But Evan it was so much fun to be in the presence of Evan Catnack while he was doing his thing. He was magical.
Absolutely.
And incredibly talented at this. And then we trained another dozen distillery managers, half of which could pull it off. Nobody was as good as Evan.
Yeah. Well, it was really fun. I know you're proud of that heritage and I'm proud of you for what you achieved in that world. Hey, Michael, it's been great to chat. And I look forward to having more of these conversations with you about the world of marketing and business and strategy. And hopefully we'll see you again soon.
That sounds good, Pete. Thank you. And thank you for helping the mentor program to be a success for Johnny Walker.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Believe me.
Okay. Take care.